Welcome, comedy fans, to an all-new comedy at the Carlson Cast. Get more information and subscribe at carlsoncast.com. We're super excited about this episode. It's number 114, if you can believe that, with Takara Williams. We're super excited about that. Today's episode is, of course, brought to you by Sapori Cafe and Catering. It's Rochester's favorite spot for lunch and any of your catering needs. Find them on Facebook and Instagram at Sapori Rochester. Also, of course, Three Heads Brewing. They're the makers of Rochester's favorite beer. Remember, do good things and always be kind. And now here's your hot host. I don't have anything bad to say about him. He's got a cute cardigan on today. He's too cute. Mr. Vinny Paulino.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Comedy Carlson Cast.
You ruined it all with that jiggle.
I'm being sassy and cute.
Be happy if you're listening to the audio version. Sassy. Just saying.
I would like to wish you all a very happy Valentine's Day.
Aww. Yeah.
Except for you, Brian.
I was going to say, hope not, because that makes me uncomfortable.
Actually, I got you a box of chocolates. Ross and I went in on them together.
We did.
I bought the poison. Ross brought the chocolates.
No, I thought they'd just be X-Lax.
Nobody, don't eat that one. That's for Brian.
Yes, correct.
That's Brian's special.
It's labeled. It says, do not eat.
Smacking it out of Vinny's hand. That's Brian's.
Well, we're excited for today's show. Takara Williams is joining us.
Yay.
Yes. Yay.
Very interesting woman.
Yeah, absolutely. For those of you who watched Bring the Funny on NBC, you are very familiar with Takara. What you may not know about her, she's a mother of three. You may also not know that she spent a long time working in the California penal system.
It's Ross's favorite movie.
California penal system 8 is actually the best one. But yeah.
Okay.
Still penaling.
If I watch 8, do I need to get the plot from like 6 and 7?
You know, do 3 and 4 and then go right to 8. You can skip, okay. They sort of weave in and out, so it's fine.
Okay.
It's really just the same actress.
Different hats.
Oh. Different prison jumpsuits.
Well, yeah. What a fun way to start the show. I'll tell you, though, it is going to be a good day today. The text line is open. Feel free to start texting your questions for Takara, 585-484-0265. Now, we have a big event coming up here next Tuesday, and I would be amiss if I did not talk about it. Would you mind hitting my screen for me, Craig? Boom. There it is. Play-to-palooza.
Where would you rather be?
Than right here,
right here
now, with a garbage plate.
Sure.
So, for those of you who are uninitiated and don't know what's going on Tuesday, February 18th, all of the best restaurants in Rochester are going to be joined together right here, and they're going to be making their versions of the garbage plate for you to sample. You come back to me for you to sample and enjoy right here at Comedy at the Carlson. It is sponsored by our friends over at Stevens Media, and tickets are available now, carlsoncomedy.com.
And it's at the Carlson, which is great. You're also supporting Rochester's only remaining industry. Mm-hmm. Which is the garbage plate. So, little hometown, you know, put your money back where it belongs.
It's in
your hometown.
Mines.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's all we got.
In Rochester, we mine Mac salad.
Yeah.
You know, if you really want to Rochester it up, bring a film camera.
Yep.
Bring a film camera.
Yeah, definitely.
Call your grandma.
Call your...
Borrow her camera.
Some older Ray-Ban sunglasses that aren't made in Italy.
If you have a pink slip from Kodak,
yep.
We might give you
a little
deal at the door. And that's a big might.
Yep.
More like a big no.
Those don't get as much on the secondary as they used to now.
There's a lot
of them available.
So we're excited about Play-to-Palooza. That's like kind of my favorite night of the year.
I know.
Like, screw Christmas.
You've been giddy for like a week.
Yeah.
You've been eating all healthy and stuff.
Yeah.
You can just go in and binge. You've been saving it up.
They're not going to see what hit them.
There's going to be a shock to your system.
There's going to be just a big fat blur just going from booth to booth to booth, pushing people out of the way, going, VIP, VIP.
Your heart's going to say, this isn't an impossible burger, and you're just going to drop like a sack of potatoes.
So get here early is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Arrive, get your tickets now.
Dinner
arrive
and
early.
A show.
Yeah.
Come watch them drag me out.
Yeah.
Watch Vinny convulse and eat a garbage plate.
Watch a crying Vinny get dragged out of a... Yeah.
That's mean, guys. That's mean. You shouldn't fat shame.
It's not because you're fat. It's just because you like to eat.
Okay.
Those two aren't necessarily related.
Yes, they are.
Well,
that's what I've been trying to explain to the doctors.
It's my glands.
Glandular. I've just been drinking a lot of water.
Yeah.
Who's that guy, that doctor on that My 600-Pound Life?
Oh, I don't.
You've never seen that show?
I've never seen that show.
Yeah, that's a great show. If you're an overweight person and you've not watched My 600-Pound Life,
to make yourself
watch
feel
it,
better.
And then... you know,
like, I'm doing great.
Start using that Planet Fitness membership that you're paying for. So, apart from that, this is going to be a really cool episode today because we have a very special segment we are going to be debuting.
Yes.
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 Ground floor.
Ground floor. Nowhere to go but up.
But up.
Huzzah.
Huzzah.
Our man Billy DeTore joining the podcast is going to be
Rochester legend.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, it's Billy DeTore and the garbage plate. That's it. That's all we got.
Chief exports.
And, the ghost of Eastman.
Ghost of, yeah.
Yeah. That's a really gloomy ghost.
Yep.
Ooh, can't take my picture.
I was secretly gay.
Is that what it's about to you?
Yeah. Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Way to bring the room down, Brian.
Yep.
Either way, Billy DeTore is being here with This Week in Comedy History. Coming up next, after these fine words about some upcoming shows here at Comedy at the Carlson.
Hey, wrestling fans. You know I got you covered. One night only, coming up this St. Patrick's Day. That's right. One of the happiest, most spirited nights of the year. Be here at Comedy at the Carlson for Grilling JR Live. That's right. Jim Ross, the legendary voice of wrestling. Fuck out! Featuring Conrad Thompson, one night only in the Rickles Room. You may know him from AEW, you may remember from WWF. March 17th. Get your tickets right now. They are on sale. We will see you there. And don't forget, coming up this June, ECW Originals present the whole effing truth tour. Stories from the extreme. I've always wanted to do that. Featuring Just Incredible, the franchise Shane Douglas, and the Sandman, all on our stage just for you. That's right, one night only, Sunday, June 14th. Tickets are on sale now, carlsoncomedy.com. Don't forget, Comedy at the Carlson is your home, Rochester, for non-sports entertainment.
Hey, everybody. We are really, really excited to debut a brand new segment here at the Carlson Cast. We are joined in studio for the very first time by our newest cast member, radio veteran, and our new pal, Billy DeTore.
Hey, Vinny. Hey. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Vinny. It's great to
Brian
be here.
Brian didn't do a thing for you, Billy.
Well, thank you, Vinny. Nothing.
You're welcome.
Actually, Vinny, if my old company had promoted me half as good as you, I'd still be working there.
Well, I'm glad they didn't. We're glad to have
you. I mean,
you.
We're sorry for you.
Yes, yeah. We're very sorry that your living disappeared.
But I am very happy to be here.
What's that they say when one door closes, you know, somebody opens up a window to mediocrity? Here it is.
Yeah.
And I jump right out of it. Yep. I'm right here.
And landed on the couch. So mm-hmm. Billy is here to do a brand new segment with us called This Week in Comedy History, where we are going to celebrate the traditions of stand-up. We're going to learn a little bit,
yeah,
and we're going to have a little bit of fun. So how do we want to start this off today, Bill?
Let's start with some birthdays.
Hey!
Because comedy wouldn't exist without the people who created it.
Solid.
And let's celebrate the people that created comedy. Do you know who Edgar Bergen is?
I've heard the name, but I did not know.
Is he a ventriloquist?
He is a ventriloquist. You make tell by the picture, there's Charlie McCarthy and Mortimer Snurd with him. But Edgar Bergen was such a good ventriloquist. His comedy timing was so sharp. He was so funny. His biggest success, he was in TV and movies, but his biggest success, was in radio. A ventriloquist on the radio.
You're kidding me.
No, for real. For years and years, one of the most popular radio programs of
That's a pretty good gig if you can get it.
Right.
The 30s and 40s was him doing a radio show. Hey, Charlie. Hey, Edgar. How you doing? You know, it's
back and forth with the voices.
Huh? I assure you, my lips are not moving.
Exactly. So
I assure you, the dolls are in the room, too.
The other thing I like about Edgar Bergen, who would have been 117 years old on February 16th, so he is no longer with us. Father of actress Candace Bergen, if you remember Murphy Brown.
You're kidding me.
No.
I had
no
idea. Maybe that's where I heard his name before.
But
I heard her real father was Charlie McCarthy.
Ooh. Scandal.
A little scandal.
Given the wood.
All right. Who else we got on the birthday list?
February 17th, Larry the Cable Guy. You have Ralphie May, would have been 48 years old. Rest in peace, Ralphie May. And Esther Koo is 40 years old on February 17th. February 19th, I know... Vinny's a big fan of Joey Coco Diaz.
Clean your muffler. Yeah. Clean your muffler, doggy. What are you doing? What are you doing?
It's Friday morning. Wash your balls.
That's it. That's it.
Very good. February 20th sees Trevor Noah turn 36 years old. And
you know what kills me?
What?
Trevor Noah is 1 year younger than me.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch, my soul. And hosting the Daily Show. And you got the Carlson cast. You're on your way.
I like Billy better than you.
This is the weekly show.
Yes.
The weekly show.
Way less work.
Yeah.
And February 21st, Jordan Peele of Key and Peele. Now in the more serious things like The Twilight Zone and Get Out. But Key and Peele, very funny. And Kamal Nanjiani turns 42 years old on the 21st. Kamal Nanjiani, excellent movie, The Big Sick. I recommend it if you
haven't seen
it.
Amazing movie.
Yeah.
And he's great on Silicon Valley.
And he is jacked now.
Why did he get jacked?
For he's in one of the new Marvel movies.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. Good for him. So
this week in comedy history, what do we got? Richard Pryor. And I have a question to ask you. On February 19th, 1977, Richard Pryor won a Grammy for Best Comedy Album.
Uh-huh.
He beat Cheech and Chong's Sleeping Beauty. Bill Cosby is not himself these days.
That is actually
accurate. He's definitely not himself these days.
Do you know that he's in jail pretending to be a doctor right now?
With the pudding pop. National Lampoon's Goodbye Pop album and Red Fox, You Gotta Wash Your Ass. The name of the album.
Can I guess?
Yes.
Is it This N-Word's Crazy?
No, it's Bicentennial N-Word.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, that's right, 77.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My question is, if you're presenting the Grammy and reading the nominees, do you do it?
Who would have thought Red Fox would be the one to make you comfortable?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like Siri. You ever ask Siri to say something with the N-word in it?
No.
I was listening.
No, Brian.
No, I was listening. I was just happened to be listening to Wu-Tang, and I asked Siri what I'm listening to, and it's Shame on an N-Word by Wu-Tang Clan. Please don't make me sing it.
Oh, wow.
That was hilarious. Yeah, it was hilarious.
So I missed the telecast. I don't know if they did it live or if it was one of the awards that they did off, but who would they have had present? Would you need a black man as the presenter to even approach
maybe not as much as he would now?
Or do you have Carol O'Connor pretend he's Archie Bunker?
Yeah, Carol O'Connor would have done a great job with it. This next one here, you see, Bicentennial. Yikes. Cut to commercial. That's wild. He won that one, huh?
He won that year, yes.
Dope.
Okay, next story. What do we have next? We have Kevin Carlson.
Dale Earnhardt.
Dale Earnhardt. Oh, I love this story. Comedy legend Dale Earnhardt. No, NASCAR legend Dale Earnhardt appeared on the David Letterman Show, Late Night with David Letterman, to do the top 10 list. He had won the Daytona 500 the day before. First time in 20 years. He'd been trying for 20 years to win the race. So he showed up on the David Letterman Show to give the top 10 reasons why he finally won the Daytona 500.
You sent me this list.
Yes, I did.
It made me miss Dave Letterman so much.
Those lists were so good.
Do you want to hear a couple of them?
I do.
I got them in front of me. Number 10. It took me 19 years to realize I had the emergency brake on. Solid. I liked number 7. Stop letting my 300-pound cousin Ricky ride shotgun. Number 5. Who cares? It took me 20 years. At least my name's not Dick Trickle.
That's great.
And number 1 reason why it took Dale Earnhardt 20 years to win at Daytona. My secret to success, one can of motor oil in my engine, one can of motor oil in my pants. Good old Dave Letterman. Mm-hmm. So that was how long ago?
That was 1998. He was on February 16th, 1998 on the David Letterman Show. And he passed away. Well, he was killed in that same race 3 years later.
Yeah.
Wow.
I met him a few times, and he seems like he's a scary guy, but like I would not think comedic timing would be his best.
He did really good on it. If you look up the video on YouTube, he did a nice job with the top 10 list.
Yeah.
So let's see. What do we have next after Dale Earnhardt? We will talk about
Charles
Rocket, Saturday Night Live. I really got to wear my glasses.
Charles Rocket?
Look,
is that his Christian name?
His real name is Charlie Cav. I can't even say it. It's like a French name. He also went by the names Charlie Kennedy and Charlie Hamburger before deciding on Charles Rocket.
Now, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
When yeah. Charles Rocket is an improvement on your previous stage name, mm-hmm. that's not a good
Charlie name. Hamburger.
Charlie
Everybody
Hamburger.
Just like hungry.
Yeah.
But I like that he went with Charles Rocket instead of Charlie Rocket.
And he did go by Charles Rocket.
Yeah.
The Saturday Night Live cast, the original cast, had left after the previous season. Whole new cast, new producer.
We're talking 1980 here?
1980 to 81, yes. Okay. We're talking about 1981. That season started in September of 80. In February of 81, Charles Rocket, he was the Weekend Update anchor at that mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. He was predicted to be the breakout star, the new Chevy Chase, the new Bill Murray type of guy, completely neglecting that a young man by the name of Eddie Murphy was in the cast. Joe Piscopo had some success. Gilbert Gottfried was in that cast.
Gilbert was in there for 1 year, I believe.
I only
remember Gilbert Gottfried from one sketch on SNL, and it was one of those Mr. Robinson's Neighborhoods where he was a yeah. mailman.
Okay.
That's the only sketch I remember Gilbert being in on SNL ever.
But Charles Rocket, on February 21st, 1981.
One week from today.
Exactly. I'm sorry, the This Week in Comedy History for the following week.
Sure.
So,
we're getting you ready for next week, people.
Exactly. So Charles Rocket, throughout the – Charlene Tilton was the guest host, Time one of the stars of Dallas. Mm-hmm. There was the big Who Shot JR thing that was going on. That was – the hugest thing in TV at the time. So a recurring sketch throughout the show was that Charlene Tilton from Dallas and Charles Rocket were flirting with each other, and other cast members were jealous, and someone shot Charles Rocket.
Interesting. So this is the
SNL
sketch.
It was a running thing throughout the show of Saturday Night Live. And at the end, he says, and I can swear on this show.
Hold on, yeah. Hold on.
Okay, have the clip. Do you want
I have
to just
the clip.
Play the clip?
Brian,
at the end of the show, right. over the end credits, Charles Rocket sort of self-destructs his own career.
This is we're to call this the undoing of Charlie Rocket, right here, Brian. You ready?
Yep.
Show my screen. Oh, play.
Charlie, how are you feeling after you've been shot?
Oh man, it's the first time I've ever been shot in my life. I'd like to know who fucked me.
All right, bring it back
oh,
to me.
Poor Charlie Rocket.
On live TV, he said, I want to know who the fuck shot me.
Right.
And that was his last episode of Saturday Night Live. They continued
wager.
The rest of the season without Mr. Rocket, who still, for the next 20 years, almost 25 years, still had a career. He was the villain in Dumb and Dumber.
That's right.
He played Bruce Willis's brother in 6 episodes of Moonlighting. Mm-hmm. Character actor work. Stand up and bit parts, but in 2005 killed himself.
Yikes.
Unfortunately, Mr. Rocket, and not in a normal way either.
He tried to land vertically on a platform in the ocean, and he fell off.
He went up like the Challenger.
The death by sharp object. He slit his throat.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Charles Rocket,
R.I.P.
yes. Oh. Mr. Rocket. But
so let me ask you this question. If Shane Gillis had just said the F word, do you think he'd still have a job at SNL in 2020?
Oh, I think yeah. That's what I was just going to say. I don't think that'll be – you'd get a slap on the wrist from Lawrence saying, please don't do that again.
Times have definitely changed.
But they wouldn't care.
I mean, it had happened before.
We get fined, you're paying it. That would have been it.
It happened before, and I don't know, maybe because he obviously – said it on purpose, it happened by accident in the past.
It's probably the shitting grin after he said it is why he got.
Watching people react to that was so funny to me. Like, just watch, like, you go back to my screen for a second, but watch, like, the cast after he says it. They just lose their minds.
Yeah. Look at his little face. He's very proud of having said it. Smoking a cigarette on screen would get fired quicker than saying the F word.
I just don't understand how anybody, like, I mean, in 1980, you have to know better.
Yeah.
You have to know better. I mean, it's basically we watched the destruction of this guy's career right in front of us.
He's probably 3 sheets to the wind.
Yeah. 30 years ago.
30. 30 years ago, 1981. Was that 30 years ago? Yeah.
Yeah, just about. Yeah. About 29.
Yeah.
So that's This Week in Comedy History. Now, folks, a little surprise. We are going to be giving you the opportunity to win some tickets to see Takara Williams, our guest, who's going to be in the studio in just a minute or two. This weekend, you can come to one of the late shows. Your choice. All you have to do is text us the right answer to Billy's comedy history trivia question. Right?
Yep.
Pretty easy, right, Brian?
Yeah.
Text line is open, 585, right under me, 484-0265. We're going to give away some tickets. You will get a text in return if you're a winner. You ready for your trivia question, Billy?
I am. What comedy? Do you want to do it or do you want me to do it?
I want you to do it.
I want you to do it.
Okay. What comedy legend was discharged from the Navy after dressing up like a female and saying he had homosexual urges?
Famous comedian.
Legend.
We're going to tell you.
Comedy legend.
Big time comedy legend. That's your clue, ladies and gentlemen.
And
text
wanna,
in your answers.
I want to know, was Klinger. This, that's, was he an inspiration for the character Klinger in MASH?
Yeah. Might have been.
Might have been.
Might have been, because that actually is a pretty good clue. We're talking pre-MASH.
Mm-hmm.
Pre the television show MASH. So text in your answers. We will tell you the answer to that next week during this segment. We're going to let it hang. But if you want to win tickets, see Takara Williams, 585-484-0265. Billy DeTore, thank you for coming in this
thank
morning.
Thank you. I hope I did okay.
Billy.
In the words of the Beatles, I hope I passed the audition.
Brian couldn't have done it.
No.
Brian couldn't have done it. It would have
I promised to wear
research.
My glasses next week so I can look at the screen and know what I'm seeing.
I love it. All right. We're going to be back with Takara Williams in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Hey everybody, lots of cool shows coming up at Comedy at the Carlson. Visit us at carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. This very weekend we have Takara Williams. Still tickets available for that. Make sure to check that out. She's a very funny lady. And we have Sorcerer Sky Sands tonight in the Rickles Room on February 14th. Drew Michael, February 20th through the 22nd. And we have the hilarious musical comedian Matt Griffo, February 21st. Dry Bar Comedy returns February 27th to the 29th. Those sell out really quick, so make sure to check that out. And Jamie Lissau is back in town March 5th through the 7th. Joel James in the Rickles Room March 6th and 7th. And Faison Love is back March 12th through the 14th. Eager to have him on the show again. And Dan Viola March 13th through the 14th in the Rickles Room. And Steve-O March 27th through the 28th. Rich Scheidner is March 27th and 28th, also in the Rickles Room. And the Sklar Brothers are here April 2nd through the 4th. Those also sell out very, very quickly. And one of our favorite guests, Jesse May Peluso, is back April 9th through the 11th. Diego Atanasio, April 10th in the Rickles Room. And Earl David Reed on April 16th through the 18th. Adam Ray, April 23rd through the 25th. Ryan Nymiller, April 30th through May 2nd. And May 2nd, also Dave Smith in the Rickles Room. And Mike Danvers back May 15th and the 16th. Again, visit carlsoncomedy.com for tickets or call 585-4-COMEDY. And we will see you at the shows.
Hey, folks, we are back, and we are honored to have joining us in studio our headliner this weekend, Takara Williams.
Hi, everybody.
This is what a room full of weird dudes clapping for you sounds like.
I've had weirder. So
okay.
This is mellow. This is very mellow.
Well, get comfortable. We're going to try to keep you here a while.
Super comfy here.
So, Takara.
Yeah.
You are a twin.
I am a twin, and she lives here in Rochester.
I know. I was going to say that.
She does. Yeah.
Now, you didn't grow up in Rochester. You grew up in the Bronx, though, right?
I did, right in the South Bronx. Yes, I grew up in the Bronx.
And you're in L.A. now.
I am in L.A. now.
And your sister. Now, your twin sister, are you fraternal, identical?
Fraternal.
Okay. So you don't like to have the parent trap thing going on. You
no, we don't. We don't. We don't.
You weren't able to play pranks on people as a child.
No, we weren't. I wish we were.
Do the identical ones look down on you?
When
you
I don't
go to
really
the twin
know.
Conferences,
I don't really really, I don't think I've ever been. Some people are so into the twin thing. They have like the twin conference and the twin thing every year. And I'm like, shut up. You know, like we're adults now. Stop it. You know, I've never been to a twin conference or they have them.
That's actually a real thing because I thought he was joking.
It's a real thing.
No, it is a real thing.
They do.
No, yeah, it is a real thing.
I think it's weird, but
they're all over the place.
Yeah.
Do you like conferences or like field days? Like, I mean, do they do like games and stuff?
Yeah, it's like
shuffleboard tournaments.
Yeah, but it's always like identical twins though. Like, what's the fun in fraternal twins? You know, like fraternal twins showing up. Like, hey, this guess which one's with me? You know, it'd have to be like. Guess which one's my twin? That's the game it would literally be.
I would imagine, though, that, like, being an identical twin is probably a nightmare. I think you probably got lucky.
Maybe. Maybe because two of, you know, exactly me would be hard on the world.
I'm glad you're not identical because I am incapable of recognizing identical twins.
Like, really?
Three times in my life, I've had conversations with the wrong one.
That's hilarious.
One of them, it took me a year before I realized that the person was a twin.
Every time it started off with, you know, your brother's a real asshole.
Right. Is he? Wow.
They were both comedians and I did not realize they were twins.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. It was the Sklar brothers. Very
upset. Of course, it was the Sklar brothers.
I was wearing an open mic, and I just kept introducing them. And I just never caught that it was
right. And they never said anything.
Nope.
And they knew that you didn't know.
Yeah,
and that's the games that they play. Yeah. I don't trust them.
So you're no stranger to Rochester. I'm sure you've been here before visiting your sister. Or is this your first time here?
It's my first time.
Really?
It's cold here.
I was going to say this is probably. A weird weekend going from LA.
I've been saying this all morning. It said 5.
5 degrees.
Yeah.
Why do you live here? We are adults. We have to do better for ourselves. It said 5 and I had on a full heel one piece outfit and we drove by the hotel and it looked so familiar. And I was like, are we at the hotel? Are we driving by? He said, yeah. I said, can I go in there? Change because it said 5.
It's a solid reason.
I remember actually saying to my father one time, oh, it's not that bad out. It's like 4.
What? I can't. You guys are insane. It is 5 outside.
Kids are in school right now.
They're living their lives in school, having a great day, and I'm outside and it says 5. I cannot. It's beautiful here, though. I will give you that.
Do you think that maybe it just makes us a little tougher as people?
No.
No. Okay.
I think you're right. A little crazy.
Didn't even hesitate.
No, not even a little bit.
But it's so beautiful here. Driving around and just looking at everything, the structure of the buildings, the old, you know. I think it's a gorgeous place. It's just really cold. Everybody's like, come back in May.
There are three months absolutely gorgeous that you would really enjoy.
Really?
Yes. This isn't them.
June, July, August.
Yeah. And I heard it gets really hot, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're the worst. We have like bipolar temperatures.
Right.
Upper 80s, lower 90s, pretty regularly.
That's not bad.
What brought your sister here? What did she do wrong?
I don't know. Somebody else asked me that today. I don't know. I think she just wanted Okay, so my little brother lives upstate New York, and she moved upstate New York to, you know, just to live where he lived so he wouldn't be by himself. And then she wound up moving to Rochester. I think he lived in Watertown or something like that.
Yeah.
And worse than here.
How close is that?
Like within an hour.
Yeah, it's really tiny in Watertown.
Yeah, roughly an hour or so.
Yeah. And then somehow she wanted something with a little more people and she wound up in Rochester. And then when she said she liked Rochester, it was nice. Then my little sister moved to Rochester. And then when she said it's cool up here, then my brother moved to Rochester.
And Jakar was like, I'll be in LA.
Yeah, I was already in LA.
I'm good where I'm at.
Yeah, so three of my siblings live up here.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So Takara Williams is here for 4 more shows this weekend. You get your tickets right now. They're available 585 for comedy or visit carlsoncomedy.com.
I think we're almost out, so you got to get them like now.
Yeah, it's hotcake time in the morning.
Yeah.
Because friends, family, well-wishers, people who just need heat in their lives are all buying tickets to come here.
All of your relatives, they're invading our city.
Yeah, hurry up.
Yeah, like come to the show tonight. Not only are you going to laugh, you could huddle together for warmth.
Yeah, let's rub our hands together for warmth.
It's
going to be good shows. It's going to be fun.
I'm really happy to have you here because, you know, when I research comics to figure out what we're going to talk about, you know, there's lots of things, but there were things about you that stood out that were fascinating. Obviously, the twin thing is really interesting.
Right.
But I'm just going to ask you this question.
Sure.
Where did you first get exposed to stand-up comedy?
Oh, goodness. I started doing stand-up. I had a really bad breakup. And you know how most women were like, I got to go find myself. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm going to get into acting. And I went to this audition in New Jersey for this role in this movie. I did not get the role. And but the producers all agreed that I should be doing stand-up. And the audition should have lasted 5 minutes. We were in there for like 25 minutes laughing. It was a serious role. And I didn't know. I made it a funny role. Yeah. They set up a place for me in downtown, not downtown, in Harlem to do stand up. They made a phone call and said, hey, we've got a spot for you tonight in Harlem. You should go do it.
So they immediately like hooked you up with stand up.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I went that same
night. On an audition.
Yes. They all showed up in the front of the comedy club that night. I performed. I was supposed to do 3 minutes. I wound up doing 8. Did great. And I have not stopped since. It's been 10 years.
Wow. So hold on.
Yeah.
You not only wowed movie producers to the point where they were like, you know, we're not going to put you in the movie, but we're going to make some calls and get you some stage time.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're not going to miss it. We're going to be there.
And they were there. Front row center. I'm still friends with them to this day.
Can I get their numbers after the show? But apart from that, that's incredible. I've never heard a story like that before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And your very, very first time on stage, mm-hmm. you did 8 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And I was supposed to do 3, and the host walked out. And
was the host pissy, or were they cool?
He was so cool. He was so cool. And he brings me up to when I get off, and he goes, you were hilarious. And I said, thank you. And he said, how long have you been doing stand-up? I said, this is my first time. And he said, are you kidding me?
Did he get mad at you?
No, he was like, you were going to be such a star.
What time was the audition?
It probably was about 10 a.m.
What time was the show?
Around 8 p.m.
So you had 10 hours to prepare a set.
Mm-hmm.
How do you even do that?
I just talked. The producer said, just go up there and talk. Because one of the questions in the audition was, have you ever acted before? And I said, no. And they said, what brought you here? I was like, a bad breakup. And they were like, what? So then I started talking about the breakup. And, you know, they were like, well, how do you feel about it? I was like, well, I thought I was going to feel like this, but I really feel like this. And I just talked about, you know, going through a breakup and how I felt versus how I thought I was going to feel and what I thought was going to happen versus what's really happening. And and they were laughing. And he said, you should be doing stand-up.
You know what's amazing about that?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Comedy is supposed to come from like a place of truth,
right?
And a place, you know, of how you really feel,
right?
Like really, what's you,
right?
And the fact that you were able to channel all that,
yeah,
to the point that it impressed people,
right? It impressed me. I did that one show, and then from that one show, the host of that show booked me for another show that same week. I did another show that same week, and then several people from that show booked me for other shows. And it's just been like, you know, bing, 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 bing.
How long ago was that?
10 years ago.
That was 10 years ago. Yeah. Wow.
So, I mean, it's been a crazy trip in 10 years to where you are now, obviously.
Yeah. I was doing it for 2 years. And then I was like, I want to move to LA. Cause I know that when you move to California, any state, you technically are like starting over almost, if 100%. You're not already known. So I was like, well, if I'm going to start over somewhere, if I want to get to where I want to be, let me just move now. I don't want to put 10 years in New York and then move to LA and have to start all over in LA if I'm not at the height that I need to be. So I just moved to LA and it was one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Now, before you decided to have this life change and pursue acting, you had kind of an interesting job. You were working with the penal system. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So I was working, I was teaching in a preschool first. And then when I moved to Los Angeles, about a year in, I started substitute teaching.
Right.
And then I got into full-time teaching at all the jails in Southern California.
Who's better behaved, the inmates or the preschoolers?
I want to go with the preschoolers.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. I taught male and female adults. I taught life skills. So I taught substance, alcohol abuse, domestic violence, parenting, anger management. And it was just, it was probably one of the best jobs that I've ever had. Because you're giving, you know, to people who didn't think anybody cared.
Yeah.
And you're just giving time. And they were so appreciative of it. It got crazy sometimes. We had some stuff go down in there, yeah.
What? Okay.
Yeah.
You were in the prison?
Yeah.
Like you're in the prison?
Jail. I do not. Jail. I cannot teach in prison because they're long term and they
don't need any of that.
They like, take greater risks.
And the stuff that you're teaching is rehabilitation.
Yeah, rehabilitation. Yeah.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
More applicable to somebody who's going to be there for 3 years than 23. Versus,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
So you're in the jail. Many things could happen.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say the most memorable of your jail time scenarios?
Oh, God, there's so many. Lockdowns were a big thing. Strip search, random, not for me, but for inmates.
I used to do those around here, and they had to make me stop.
Random strip search.
Specific HR policy.
I am inside of a classroom. Everything's like it's glass the whole way around.
Yeah.
And they call out the class and tell them to stand along the wall, and I'm sitting there, and they just go into a full strip search. And I'm like, turn my head, and then you can just hear them coughing.
Oh, God. And you're just pretending to read a book.
Right. I'm like trying to cut the music up loud, and you just hear, cough. And you get about 15 guys, you know. And
it
I'm
sounds like
oh.
that Budweiser commercial.
But then they let them right back in to the classroom, and I have to continue teaching after they've had
this that didn't happen.
Horrible moment in front of me, and I've experienced them in a way that I did not ask to, and we've got to move on with our day. That is probably one of the most memorable moments.
So, like, you're doing that job. No wonder you were like, let's get into some acting.
Yeah,
some
let's go do something else.
So, preschool to jail.
Right.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a little bit of stuff going on. You know, you're out in LA.
Mm-hmm.
You're working on your craft. Was there ever a time, like during this, were you in your own head saying, I know I'm going to make it in stand up and I need to keep working on this because I really want to be done with it? Was it a motivation to
like stand up?
Yeah. Was it like a motivation for you to try to get away from that? Like, I really got to get good at stand-up because I don't want to watch people get strip searched in front of me anymore.
No. If I could go back right now and still work there, I would do both. If
really?
I could. I loved the job itself.
That's amazing. That
says
a lot about you.
I loved... It's just... I run into them all the time. They come to my shows when they get out. It's weird. They're, like, sitting right in the front. Or they'll ask me like, right, they're asking me like, do you remember me? And I'm like, no, you don't remember my face. And I'm like, what's your booking number? Cause that's probably all I'm going to freaking remember is your booking number. But I would do it all over if I could, you know, it made me part of who I am now. It made me appreciate things more. It made me be a little more patient with things and people. It made me be a little more observant. And it also allowed me to look into my wrongs and, you know, because sometimes I'm wrong, you know, and it was a life-changing experience for the good.
Yeah, so, you're always one bad day from something like that.
You are. You are.
Yeah.
You are.
Yep.
What a terrifying thought, but it's very true.
It is very true.
It's very true.
It is.
Now, you have 3 kids, right?
I tore. Yeah.
Real.
Here they go again. About, no, I love them. They're like my little broke best friends. That's what children are. They're your broke best friends. That's what they are to parents. They don't have any money, but they want to do everything with you, and you want to do it with them, but you're paying.
Yeah.
Now, you have 3 kids that are like, the age groups are all kind of separate, right? Now, how old is your youngest?
My youngest is 5.
And how old is your oldest?
19.
Wow. So, that's got to be nuts in general,
it
dealing
is.
With
so,
that much at the same time.
Chase is 19. That's the boy.
Right.
Casey's 14.
Okay.
She's the one I want to fight. The
okay.
girl.
Well,
the girl.
That's the age that you want to fight him.
The man... I think soon as she turns 16 and she opens her eyes, I'm going to punch her in the chest just so she can know. Don't play.
Happy birthday.
Yes.
No, but by the time she's 16, she'll be fine. That's what my daughter. My daughter was a nightmare, like 13, 14.
Okay,
now
thank you.
Now she's great.
My son's smooth sailing.
Yeah.
The girl, holy shit.
Yeah.
What's wrong with her?
Yeah.
Attitudes for nothing.
Yep.
Wake up. I took a deep breath and it pissed her off. I took a deep breath in my kitchen that I pay the bills, and she got it. I said,
this is my kitchen. I'll breathe how I want to.
And she goes, ew. I said, excuse me? You took a deep breath. I was like, so?
She said ew to you for take for breathing?
For breathing. Yeah. And then I have the 5-year-old. That's the Vegas baby. That's what happens in Vegas. It's turning 6 next week. Yeah. It doesn't stay there. It comes. It's back.
It comes home with you.
Yeah. But she's like the coolest, smoothest. She's perfect where she is. We needed her.
Right.
Yeah. We needed her where she is right now.
So you got kids running the gamut. You're on the road a lot now. Is it harder? Is it harder to deal with 3 kids when you're touring?
It is. It is because, you know, I'm only home a couple of days a week and everybody wants their time.
Sure.
You know, my oldest won't say it, but when I do spend time with him, he's like geeked about it. And you just got to find time for all of us together, but also time for everybody individually, which is the hard thing.
Yeah.
You got, you know,
oh, yeah.
It's hard to find that time. So I'll do like, you know, an hour once a week with the baby where we just hang out, just me and her. And then my daughter, I take on Wednesdays, I go to her school and have lunch with her on Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my son is wherever I go and he's there. I just take him with me just so we can all get some one-on-one.
Nice.
Because when they're together, they fight.
Yeah.
Really?
The 2 oldest, yeah.
Mine are the worst. They get along. It's even more annoying. Oh. I'd rather they fight. When they get along,
because they team up on you.
They're conspiring, yeah.
Yeah.
Does your 19-year-old still live at home?
Yeah.
Yeah, mine does too. Yeah.
They better. You know, I
you
said
want
this.
Them to.
Yeah, I said this out loud and people thought I was crazy for it, but I don't believe that we should kick our kids out at 18, 19. Or, you know, if they say, like my son, I want him to go to college, but he's just like, college is a waste of money right now. You know, I feel like in this day and age, I can be successful without, you know, putting myself in debt, you know, and paying it back till I'm 40. Paying back college, you know, so he's like gonna take a year off and just figure it out. And I was like, okay, you know, and I mean, he has a college fund set up. He just feels like he can put that towards something else.
And I think a lot of 18, 19, 20-year-old kids aren't prepared anymore.
We were talking about this the other day with his kid. I told him to throw him out.
No.
And he said, or what did I say? I said, like, I feel like the kids these days, like maybe 20 years old, but like development's a little bit different.
Yeah.
Like the times are different. So
they're
babies
like
a
more.
16-year-old.
Yeah.
A 20-year-old is more like a 15, 16-year-old than they used to be.
Yeah. But
I don't know.
Excuse me. I think that we let our kids go, too early. They're ill prepared, and then that's how they find themselves in these really bad situations.
You're just
going to
wind up bailing them out anyway,
right? Really bad people. You know, the young girls go live with the guy because they got to leave, and it's just let them, you know, stay home and work and save.
Yep.
You know, I think I have a friend, and her parents taught me this. From her parents' home, she was into her house. Her brother as well. They stayed home. They went to college. When they were done with college, they moved back home, and their parents allowed them each 5 years after college. Mm-hmm. You work, you save. You work, you save. You work, you save. You pay no bills. Mm-hmm. You work, you save. 5 years for each of them, they were both purchasing their own home.
Yeah.
That's an interesting lesson.
And I think that more parents, we should be doing that instead of saying, well, get out on your own and figure it out, as opposed to, you know, and they're both married, you know. I mean, they were 20, not even 30, and they both had their own, purchased their very first home.
Yeah. How was it for you?
They didn't have bad credit. They paid off their student loans and bought a home.
Yeah.
How long did you stay at home before you moved out?
I was out of, I had a kid as a teenager, so I was, I want to say 19.
Okay.
I was out.
So you have the experience of the opposite way. You learned the hardship of, like, you know, how hard it is to go out on your own at that age. So maybe you're feeling like a little, you went through the hardness of it.
And it was so unnecessary. A lot of it was just unnecessary. But I don't think my parents had the resources that, you know, that these other parents have.
Sure.
But I just feel like if you can, you know, let them start off in a good space. A lot of times as you know, these young kids, 18, 19, 20, they're starting off rough, struggling. Like you shouldn't be struggling and figuring it out at 19. You should be guided, and there's no guidance. We're just throwing them. Like I know some of my friends are like, well, my son turned 18. I'm kicking him out. What about your son? I was like, he gonna stay here for a little bit?
Yeah.
And figure it out. I'm not gonna throw him into the street because I want mommy time. You know, like We'll stay here.
That's a beautiful thing, though.
Yeah, and I learned that lesson from them. You know, the parents said, as long as you're working, saving, and paying off your student loans, you can live here.
Oh, yeah, my son's got to be working.
And they paid them off. Paid off the student loans, worked on their credit, and bought a home.
So when you do jokes about your children on national television, do they give you any kickback? They give you any grief?
Yeah. My son, sometimes I'll do a joke and my son, I'll come home, but I don't know he knows. Like, I'll walk in the house and he'll be like, really? And I'll be like, I'll try to pretend. I'm like, really?
He's got narcs everywhere.
Really, what? And he was like, I heard the joke that you did. You put it on social media. I was like, well, which one? And he's like,
you have to be more specific.
Why would you talk about that? I was like, why would you do it? If you don't do it, then I won't talk about it.
Do you feel like maybe that's a deterrent to the kids? Like, I better act right or my
I'm gonna talk about it on stage, so don't be a jerk. And but they like it though. Like my daughter, they like the jokes about them. They like to listen to them because it's like my point of view of something that they've done. And my daughter's like, I didn't even know I did that. I'm like, yeah, you did all that. She's like, now my friends follow you, and I'm like, good. So they can know what you do in the house.
That's a good little tool to have in your back pocket.
Yeah, yeah, but they love it though. They like it. They don't think anything of it. They like it.
Yeah,
yeah, they enjoy it.
And every time they think about doing something bad, they think millions of people may hear this one day.
Sometimes they do it just because. Let me tell you what I did today. I'm like, why would you tell me that?
Oh no! Hold on, let me get a pen. This is old.
You use it as a little joke or something. I'm like, but they like that. You know, they're teenagers and their mom to stand up. And
has that ever worked? Have they ever like come and told you something that you actually put into a joke? It's always better if it's like completely unintentional. And yeah. They have no idea, right?
Yeah, I don't like when that. So I got this joke for you. I'm like, go wash the dishes. I don't want to hear a joke that you have. But it's funny. It's funny. It's funny. And then my daughter will tell it to me, and I'll be like this the whole time. And she always goes, and then this happened, and then this happened, right? Nothing? Okay. And then she goes to whatever it was that she was supposed to be doing because I didn't smirk or laugh. And,
right.
Yeah.
So as a comic, yeah. Tell the truth. There's nothing more annoying than somebody telling you to, you could put this in your act.
Right.
Like they're doing you a favor.
I cannot stand.
I know.
When I get someone that says, so you a comedian? Tell me a joke. Yeah. That has got to be number one. Number two is, so I got a little, okay, listen, I'm gonna tell you something. You can use it again if you feel like it. And they tell me the joke, and it's really difficult it's a bad joke, but you don't want to tell them it's a bad joke. So you're like, oh, that's so funny. Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah, so next time I see you, I want you doing that joke. Right.
There's nothing worse than having to feign that you're entertained with people telling you about somebody in their office who said something to the boss that you don't know or care about.
Right. And then, she walked around the corner and the boss was there, and then she said, so you want some pie? Right? You get it? Pie, right? I'm like, oh, that was, yeah, like pie. Yeah,
like they think you're going to go, I'm writing a sitcom. It's going to be called You Want Some Pie? Like they...
It's the most insane.
And I hear they always word it like, you can use this in your act if you want.
So yeah, and that's exactly
if you do something stupid,
thank you.
If you do something dumb enough that I'm going to put it in my act, I ain't going to ask your permission.
Yeah, right.
I'm just going
to
do it.
And then they'll reiterate it later. So you can use this if you want to. And I'm like, okay, thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
How many of those people you think actually like wait for the special just to see if their joke made it?
I think a lot of them do.
Really?
I hope they have watch parties and invite all their friends and then...
Yeah. Like, yeah, then have it not be
don't there. Tell Sheila. She's going to tell the pie story. Get everybody in here.
It's coming up next.
Oh, yeah, must be the TV cut it. Right. It was pretty edgy.
Yeah, because I'm sure she did it. I think they edited it out. You know, it's one... Yeah, I think they do wait to see if it made it or not, you know.
So you stepped on stage for the first time 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Here we are, 2020. It's pretty amazing in 10 years that you're headlining clubs. I have to say, that is not that is rarefied air.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I think I put a lot of hard work into stand-up. I think I've been really consistent. And I just believe in it. I believe that there's healing in laughter, and I think that's really why I love stand-up so much. But there's no other option. You know, some people have a plan B. I feel like if you have a plan B, you're going to slack on your plan A because you've got a cushion, you know, to sit back on. So there's no other option but this right here. And so this is what I put everything into because this is all that there is at this point.
See, that's the thing people don't understand.
Right.
Is that like comedy is not just one of those things you could do kind of half-assed. If you really want to do it, it is hard.
It is hard. It's hard to get people to think that what you think is funny is funny.
Yeah.
It's so difficult to get you to think it and him to think it. And then, you know, the
crowd. It's hard to get him to think in general.
Yeah,
the crowd
much.
Is so diverse at times.
Yeah.
And you've got to have material that everyone connects to in some way. Mm-hmm. So it is difficult because I never want to get typecast like as like that dirty comedian, that raunchy comedian, the one, the female who always talks about sex. And, you know, not that I, you know, not that I don't have sex, but just that there's other experiences that we have in life that connect all of us. And that's what my stand-up is about. It's about connecting us all together. You know, I talk about my kids. I talk about getting divorced and what that was like, mm-hmm. and the process of that, and now to being single for almost, you know, 4 years, and how much I hate that, and what getting back into dating is like, you know. And it's just stuff that we all have experienced at one point or another.
So I have to ask you, Yance. You have the coolest nickname.
Oh, yeah.
You have the greatest nickname. Like, Vince McMahon wish he came up with the Beautiful Beast.
Right.
Tell me the story. How did you get the nickname?
It came because a lot of comedians don't think that, not a lot of comedians, just people in general, don't feel like you can be nice looking and funny. And every time I would go to
a
show.
That's what's holding me back.
Huh?
That's what's holding me back.
Yeah.
I certainly feel that way.
and when I first started comedy, and I would go to like different comedy clubs and stuff, they would automatically tell me, I would say, is it possible that I could get up and do some time? And they would say things like, you're too pretty, you're going to bomb. And I was like, what?
You're kidding me.
Yeah, you're too pretty, you're going to bomb.
I'm not going to lie to you.
And I would say, I didn't even get to perform. You didn't even see me. Yeah, well, you know how you pretty girls are. You're just going to bomb. Or they would give me an opportunity with the expectation of me bombing so that they can console me later.
I'm going to say something. No. I'll completely admit this.
Yeah.
I've watched some pretty boys at some open mics go up and bomb horribly.
Yeah.
I never suspected they would bomb.
Yeah.
I never wished the bombing on them.
Right.
But there is something satisfied about watching someone a really good-looking person
bomb.
Fail.
They just, yeah. And so what happened was I was performing and I was doing really well performing and getting new material and just going on hitting these stages and knocking them down. And then somebody just came to me and said, you are such a beast on stage. Like, I've never seen someone go on stage and just go like you go, but you're so beautiful. And it just came that way.
The Beautiful Beast.
Yeah.
Like I said, Vince McMahon wishes he had thought of that one.
Right.
That should be like a WWE.
What was his?
Name. Oh, no, I'm saying the guy who names all the pro wrestlers.
Yeah. Oh, Vince, isn't he the owner of Vince
yeah,
McMahon?
Yeah,
and he has a son.
That one's the Beautiful Beast.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah, that's
right. Send her to the ring.
You did some modeling too, right?
I did do some modeling, yeah, back in the day. I haven't done any for a while.
Is that easy or is it hard?
Modeling is hard.
I've talked to some models who say it's really hard, and some say no, it's easy. You just
if you're a natural, I guess it's easy. But yeah. I thought it was difficult. I was like, yeah.
It's long days.
Do what with my lips? Because I just feel dorky all the time. They're like, turn your head, and it was never like a sexy turn. It was always like a. And they're like, well, turn it back a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, the other way.
Turn it 4 degrees.
Well, just counterclockwise. Put your chin down. Well, not that far down. And I'm like, I quit. I can't do this. There's too many rules. I'm going to go get back on the stage and do some stand up. So, yeah, I used to. It was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, bring the funny.
Mm-hmm.
You did very well.
I did.
Too. You did very, very well.
People were so upset that I didn't win. They were so angry.
Let me tell you what made me angry.
You have an army of internet trolls you could unleash at any time.
I will not. They were so angry at who won, and I said, "Listen,
the Flufflekins. You know, who are they?
The Valley Folk.
Never heard of them.
Okay, and I said, you know, this group has millions of followers." People love them for a reason. It may not be what you like or your cup of tea, but we're not going to degrade them because you don't understand. Like, they, you know, they deserve, they won. You know, it's okay.
Fair enough. You came in second place.
Second place.
I believe the old adage is first is the worst, second is the best.
I believe in that too.
Yeah.
And you can, now you have an army of minions that you didn't know you had.
They're so fun though.
Yeah.
They were so
It's always
angry.
Nice to have minions.
And they still come, and everybody, they come to the shows, you know, people, and that's the first thing they yell, you should have won! And I'm like, I did!
Yeah, right?
You know, because you wouldn't know about me, you wouldn't be here if I didn't do the show. You know, you're here because you saw me, you loved me, you're here today.
Yeah.
We had a question about that show from one of our viewers they sent in. And in fact, you know her, Cindy Arena. She's emceeing this weekend.
Yeah.
She wanted to know a little bit about the application process and how you made it onto that show.
Oh, God. They called me.
Right? They just knew you and called you?
Yep.
There was no audition for you?
I did not audition, no.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That means you made a name for yourself somewhere.
Yeah.
Your casting agent friend.
Nope. They didn't know about it either.
Really?
Yeah. The producer just called me one day and said, hey, I got we're looking for a comic, female comic, and such gave us your name. We looked you up. We love you. And we want to offer you a spot on this show. And I said, what kind of show is it? They said, a comedy competition. I said,
Yeah, when you hear the word competition,
I don't want to compete on national television.
Yeah.
You know, because they edit it weird and so many people got cut off. Like, you know, some people are really funny, but the way they edit it, it was just, you wouldn't even know how funny they are
because
their joke didn't land or whatever happened, and then you just never see them again.
And that's a massive thing. That's a really solid point. People don't realize, like, a lot of stand-ups work with the producers and the directors on their specials.
Yeah.
So that they make sure that the joke is presented properly. When you're dealing with, not for nothing, 30 people in a contest, whoever's editing just slaps together whatever they think is best. And it might not be the best representation of the person.
Right. But it was fun. I had a great experience. I met some really cool people on the show that I love. And it also allows me to look at stand-up differently. Or just look at comedy differently. Because when you think comedy, you just think stand-up. But there's so many different, you know, parts of stand-up. There's sketch, there's improv, there's, you know, and it just gave me a newfound, like, respect for other comedians that aren't necessarily stand-up comedians, but they are still comedians.
So I have to ask you this, because you came in second place in this thing. You really, the cream rises to the top, so to speak. When you're preparing for that, how different do you have to make your set from what you normally do? Well, I mean, clean, because you're doing a network television. But, like, when you're trying to put together something that you know they're only giving you 3 minutes, do you have to structure it differently than you were doing a 5-minute spot at a club?
You do. You have to get in and get out.
Yeah.
So you get in, hit the punchline, get out. So when we only have that little bit of time. I always run across people who try to do several jokes in 3 minutes. You're not going to hit the joke the way you want to because you're rushing the joke. So I always say, find one joke, a solid joke, and run with that joke for 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. And that's what I do.
Seems like the smarter way.
If you watch the competition, that's literally what I did.
Yeah.
I took one joke and I just ran with it for 3 minutes.
Right. And I mean, you went for the laughs per minute. You definitely tried to get as much punch in as you possibly could.
Right.
Which, I mean, served you very, very well. I went back this week and I watched the finale for that show, and I really want I want you to tell me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
How annoyed were you standing on that stage while they were pretending they had the envelope when Foxworthy's opening the envelope?
I was so annoyed.
I was sitting there going, I can't believe this.
Just open it already. Like, let us know.
Brian, did you see it?
I did not.
Okay, for those of you who did not see it, let me paint this picture.
Mm-hmm.
Takara is standing on the stage looking like $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Valley folks are standing on the other side of the stage. The host is there up on the stage. And then the judges for this were Jeff Foxworthy, Chrissy Teigen, and Kenan Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I did see one episode. I didn't see the finale.
Yeah.
Right. They give them the card. And then they start arguing for 3 minutes over who's going to open it. Finally, they give it to Jeff Foxworthy.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Foxworthy goes to open up the card. There's nothing inside of the envelope. And he's like, there's nothing in it. And instead of them, like, moving on, like, Chrissy Teigen takes it and rips the thing open.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is taking forever. Yeah. Then, remind me the name of the host.
Amanda Seals.
Amanda Seals. That's right. I had it at the top of my tongue. But Amanda Seals goes, ha, 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 got you. I'm the host. I'm going to announce it.
Right.
And then it was she announces it. But it took forever.
Sounds like a classic bit.
When you're standing there with the future on the line,
$250,000.
What is going through your brain during that? Did you want to just push Amanda down? Tell the truth.
I'm going to open it myself. That's where I was at. Just give it to me.
Just snatch it.
Because you guys are playing. But it was, I had a great time on that show.
Yeah, I'm not trying to
talk
but bad
but it
about
was nerve-wracking. It was definitely nerve-wracking to for every. It's like it was like a whole 6 minutes.
Yeah,
that's like three hours ridiculous. In wait time. You know, I'm rocking my baby toe hurts, in these shoes, and you know, Valley folks over there, we're all staring at you. We're all like holding hands because they are the greatest people.
They seem like they're very nice.
They are very nice, and then they ripped it open and they said. Valley folk, and I was just like, oh, yay, you know,
because
they're recording it, so you just want to be mindful of the facial expressions that you make and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But it was a good time.
Coming out of an experience like that, what do you think the strongest lesson you learned as a performer was? What do you think that you took from that maybe was an experience or something that you didn't know about the business or that something that helped you on stage?
I think what I took from it was that there's an entire demographic of people that I had no idea existed who now know who I am.
It's very accurate. Yeah.
Like the Midwest. I could do shows in the Midwest and sell them out.
Isn't it amazing?
Because they loved the show.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what the Midwest was.
it's like the middle of the West.
Yeah, until I'm like in some small city somewhere.
Yeah,
and my face is on billboards and all over the place. You know, just selling out shows because the Midwest enjoyed me on NBC. Nice. So I think just being able to attract a completely different demographic of people is the best. You know, it just makes me want to be more versatile with my material.
Well, and like you said, your material is very, very universal, and also I have to say, like your pacing makes it very easy to listen to. Like I watched one of your 30-minute clips on YouTube.
Oh, it says 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, and people love that.
And I was about to get up and go. I honestly only intended to watch about 9 minutes of it.
Uh-huh.
And then it was half an hour later and it was over with. Aww. Like it was just so easy to watch and very funny, and the pacing was right. It was
great.
Thank you.
Every now and then I go look on the 30-minute one, and the comments are so good. Like, people really, really enjoyed
that. You're a natural.
Oh, thank you.
Natural at stand-up. And that's why that story about the casting agents going, hey, you really need to go do this, doesn't surprise me.
Right.
At all. It really doesn't. That's, like, so amazing that your life was changed. You went for one thing, and somebody just kind of twisted the arrow and said, no, go that way.
I'm grateful.
That's the
and
thing
at just the right time in your life, too. You were looking for something different.
Right.
And somebody said, why don't you do that?
Right. And it always shocks people when I tell them that this wasn't planned.
Yeah.
You know how they're like, so did you always want to do stand-up? I'm like, nope. Never even thought about it.
But hold on, I'm on. I got to go to the stage.
Right.
So let me ask you this question, because we have a lot of people who are just getting into stand-up comedy that really want to be performers.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to ask this of all of our comics coming in, because this is just kind of one of those helpful things. Let's say the last 10 years never happened.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting over again. It's 2020.
Mm-hmm.
You have all the knowledge you have now, but you've never been on a stage before and no one knows your name.
Right.
How do you start? What would you do?
With the knowledge that I have now.
You have all the knowledge.
I wouldn't do anything different.
You just go hit a mic?
Just get to it.
I wouldn't do, with the knowledge that I have, I wouldn't do anything different. Everything that I've done has put me in a position to be in the next position, to be in the next position, to be in the next position. So if I didn't have this knowledge, I might do something different. If I had to give somebody advice on what to do if they're just starting out in stand-up, be consistent.
Yeah,
you know, there's so many people like, I'm doing stand-up. I'm not doing stand-up. I'm doing stand-up. I'm quitting stand-up. I'm doing stand-up. Be consistent. Be funny.
And they have to post 4 paragraphs about it on Facebook every time they
come
back.
Right. and also, don't put yourself in a box. That's like, I don't want to say the name of the club in Chicago. They wouldn't book me because they said I'm not urban enough. You know,
really?
Yeah, she can't bring in it. She won't be able to bring the urban crowd here. But a lot of comedians get sucked into that mentality of, you know, I'm not an urban comedian. I'm just a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
There is no urban or mainstream. Funny. I'm just Takara, you know, I'm just funny. And that's advice that I would give to an up and coming comedian is don't box yourself into a specific demographic. Like there are certain comedians that can't perform everywhere because their material isn't versatile enough to go everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's something I would tell a new comedian. Don't put yourself in a box.
And honestly, you know, I think maybe that lesson about the Midwest and learning about that it's such a massive country with people of all different shapes, sizes, ethnicities, backgrounds. Everybody is different. But if you could find the formula that speaks to everyone.
Yes.
You win.
You win that way.
You owe me a Coke.
Oh, okay.
That was a jinx. We nailed that.
Okay.
Takara Williams, 4 more shows this weekend, folks. Your feature act, Raheem, very funny guy.
No. Raheem is not my feature act.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought he said he was the feature when we walked in.
No, Mark Henderson is the feature.
Mark Henderson's the feature.
Raheem is my best friend. We grew up in the same neighborhood.
Hey, Raheem. You want to do 5?
I swear to God, I thought Todd Young said, this is Raheem the feature.
No. He's just my bestest.
Todd, you're fired. No. Right. Raheem, nice to meet you. And Mark Henderson.
He'll be debuting on stage tonight.
We're going to get Raheem
Type 20. Throw him up there.
It worked for you. They let you go up there with no experience.
It did. It definitely did.
He's been hanging around with clubs. Give a shot.
Right. Every time I think about that, I'm like, I really had no experience. And you guys just threw me up there and believed in me.
My heart hurts after hearing that story. You had to have been so nervous.
I wasn't.
You're a special kind of person.
I was not. Everybody asked me that. Were you nervous? I was like, no. I just wanted to tell somebody about this breakup I'm going through.
I think you were born for comedy.
Oh, thank you.
If you weren't nervous and you just wanted to get that out there,
yeah.
You're definitely a comedian deep down. Okay. 100%.
I appreciate that very
much. You're welcome.
Yeah.
So,
come out this weekend.
Please come see Takara. You want to
come out?
Where can people find you on the internet?
Takara Comedy. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, everything. Takara Comedy. If you can't find me, just go to my website, www.takara.com, and you can click on a link to follow me
on the buttons.
Little buttons.
Click some buttons.
Click the buttons.
And you know what? Click some buttons at carlsoncomedy.com. There's not a lot of tickets left.
There's not.
We're going to be back with the news, so stick around, everybody. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at Carlson Cast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time of the show that we love the most, the segment before we get to go home. When stand-up news breaks, Ross Johnson generally stands there and lets somebody else clean it up. Yep. Here he is. Stand-up news with the good old Ross.
Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Happy V-Day to you too, my friend.
A little bit of a slow news week, but we got some fun stuff this week, so this is going to be fun. So the Democratic primary is going on. The winner of the comedy primary, I would say. I think Andrew Yang picked up some pretty impressive endorsements from Donald Glover, from Dave Chappelle. He got some pretty fairly big name endorsements. Well, he dropped out. So
because he can do math.
Yeah. apparently coming
not
in
not gonna happen.
Apparently coming in 14th out of 8
was his little button says he can do math, see? His little math button.
Oh yeah.
Coming in somewhere in Tulsi Gabbard country was not a viable.
That's never too good.
So but you know, it's very popular. So his signature campaign piece, and as best I can tell, and I know don't email me, Yang Gang, but as best I can tell, his only campaign piece was this $1,000 a month guaranteed minimum income. So this is the idea that
freedom something or other.
The freedom dividend that this
now would... Was that $1,000 per household or per person in the household?
Oh, I think it's per household.
I believe also. I also believe it was per household.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Okay. So as his campaign had gone along, he had offered up a few, because he's rich, he had offered up a few of these freedom dividends to assorted families. As a test run, exactly, to sort of see how it goes. So in a family in Goffstown, New Hampshire, the Fosse family had been receiving this $1,000 a month from
Bob Fosse's kids. Bob just Fosse's really kids. Fell off. They really needed the help.
Since January 2019. The father had lost his job, so this allowed them to get through. in the meantime, he decided that the best, you know, a thing you could do when you've got a little extra scratch, which is the whole point of this, is that you could take up a new hobby. Perhaps you could do some, maybe, improv. You could take some improv classes.
You know, heroin's a thing.
Come again?
So maybe you could go and you could learn, you could go to a place where they teach you how to do improv and you could give them some money and then they would help you learn how to do improv. So
my
silent, I'm gonna leave it there because
I want you to make sure, those of you who are listening, I want you to make sure that you understand the silence from me right now is rage. You
can imagine a constipated rhinoceros, and that's the face that Vinny's making right now.
I'll gore ya. Hold on. He gives $1,000 a month to this family.
Yep.
Okay. I saw the
article. With no strings attached. No conditions. No. Yeah.
The man, the husband, and this family who's unemployed spent the money on improv classes. Correct?
He didn't spend all the money on improv classes.
And dinners out, though. They didn't, like, say anything worthwhile they spent it on.
No, they did. Well, okay. So I don't want to deflate this, but to be fair to this family, like, lost his job, they used this money to pay, most of it went to college loans and car payments and stuff, and then the father was able to get a new job and blah blah blah, so they feel like the money went to a good place.
I don't.
In the meantime,
I do not. If some improv charlatan took this money,
what do you think an improv class costs?
Too much.
Well, more than a good drug habit.
Okay.
Better way to spend the money.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing.
What if he had taken a stand-up comedy class?
No.
Listen, we're going to do a stand-up comedy class here at Comedy at the Carlson. Would you like to know how much we're charging for it?
$1,000 a month.
Wrong.
Well, now we are.
Now that we know.
We would have, if Yang got elected, it would have been $1,000 a month.
Yeah. $1,001. You got to make him pay something. Yeah. No, it's free. You know why? Because I don't believe in charging people to learn this kind of stuff. I personally don't believe in it. And I know that's a big thing with improv. They have levels. They're practically Scientology. Like, you go in and there's, like, all these different levels and classes, and they're charging you this and charging you that. To do what? For what career are you going to get out of taking an improv class? Where's my bat? Listen, you're not getting on Saturday Night Live. You're doing improv in New Hampshire.
Yeah, for real though. So not to be, so because I know some people I love do improv and they're great. And a couple of very successful people I know do improv. And I don't think
are
they
you
started
friends
that
with
way.
Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph? Are you?
As a matter of fact,
please.
They came to my Oscar party.
Nobody came to your Oscar party.
So
does George Takei do improv?
No.
How about Chekhov? Your buddy Chekhov. Does he do improv?
He might.
Does he do yes and with you?
I mean, but so my point is I'm not trying to be mean about improv, as you are clearly.
I'm not being mean about it.
No. Does improv go anywhere? Is my question. I know you're saying it doesn't, but like really, I'm trying to think, like, does it? Can you do any? I mean, you can use the skills. I assume will translate to other things
to annoy people.
I think in the world of comedy, you are much more likely to make money doing stand-up than you are to make money doing improv.
First off, not for nothing, the best thing about being a stand-up comic and not being, like, say, in a band is at the end of the night, you don't have to split the check.
Yes, exactly.
Like, if you're an improv troupe, they might give you $20 and say thanks.
And there's usually 16 of you.
Yeah. It's okay. Good story, Ross. I mean,
You've triggered Vinny.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something right now, folks. If someone gives your family $1,000 a month and you're unemployed, save it.
No,
save it.
The family did fine. They did well. They're back on their feet. They credit this money with helping them get back on their feet. And now he's an improv star. So he's on SNL next season. That's his new job.
Now he's annoying his wife, pretending.
Absolutely.
So, all right, honey, give me an occupation and a place.
Have an umbrella that's somehow an octopus or something.
I hate this so
much. We're
going
to get letters.
You're just asshole.
Yeah, send them on in.
You're just asshole.
Send your improv-loving letters to me. Go ahead.
Well, here's something that could trigger no one. I don't know what's going to set Vinny off anymore, but...
you ruined my Valentine's.
Rick Moranis.
Yay!
He's coming back. I love Rick Moranis. Like, if you... I think if you were alive in... say 1997, like if you had been born at that point, I think you've probably seen every Rick Moranis movie because he was in everything good.
Every Disney, he had like a big deal with Disney. Little Giants, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid, Honey, I Shrunk the Kid Too, Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Yeah.
Honey, Don't Tell the Cops I Touched the Kid. Like there's all sorts of movies he did.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters, of course.
Little Shop of Horror. You know, he was just in Parenthood, all sorts of stuff. So anyway.
How did I forget Parenthood?
Yeah. So he's been out of the – so in the 90s, his in the early 90s, his wife passed away from cancer. He basically retired to be sort of a stay-at-home dad. He's done some voiceover work, but he really hasn't been anything in almost 25 years. The last thing he was in was like a direct-to-video Honey, I Shrunk the Kids sequel. Mm-hmm. And before that, you know. So he's – it's been almost 25, 30 years since he's been around.
Here's the question. Yeah. What got – old Rick off the couch.
Honey, I Shrunk the Kids 5 or whatever.
Woo!
He did not come back for he did not want to come back for either of the Ghosts, but My Blue Heaven he was in. I forgot. I love My Blue Heaven.
Probably one of my favorite movies.
That's a great
movie. If you've never seen it, check out My Blue Heaven this weekend. Yeah. You'll have a blast.
So he was not interested in any of the new Ghostbusters movies, but they're doing a reboot slash sequel. I guess he's playing the same character. Josh Gad is going to play his kid. They're still shrinking stuff or blowing stuff up.
So there's
going to
be some singing and dancing.
Sure.
I like it.
Sure. So he's coming back for that. They're going to, you know, he's decided that this was exciting enough for him to come back to. So no word on when that's coming out. But I don't know. I like Rick Moranis.
Those Disney dollars will get you off the couch.
Sure.
Once Disney like really starts calling and they're like, we need you, Rick.
We need you. You're in. Put me in, coach.
His grandkids are going to be thrilled to see him in a movie probably. Yeah. You know, that's what happens a lot of these guys. Like they take that time to smell the roses and be with their family. It was a sad situation for him.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's awesome. That's a good story.
And I don't know if people know.
If I find out he's been charged with people for improv classes for 25 years, however, we're
gonna
have a problem.
Oh yeah, I left that off. That's all he's been doing. Yeah, that's how he's been making money in the meantime.
The Moranis Improv Studio. Act like you're really small. Yeah.
But I don't know if like young people know who he is. I mean, he's been in all these movies that people might have seen, but he's been away for so long. Yeah,
I think that's what. I don't really recognize his face.
Yeah,
but that guy. Well, I mean, I don't know what his face looks like. I don't know how he's held up over the last 25 years.
Yeah, I think he looks similar. I've seen pictures. So, finally.
He didn't grow a horn.
This was just sort of a good news human interest story to wrap up our Valentine's Day. Natalie Levant, this is from the Philadelphia Inquirer. She's a Philadelphia comedian. She started at the age of 81. She's now 88.
Oh, I saw this.
She's going strong. Yeah, she's been doing, so she does like, she does a lot of local, she does a lot of local events. She does CD bars. She does gay bars. She does like Jewish centers. But she's been going strong. She's become sort of a local institution. She
All right,
is
Natalie.
Foul mouthed and covered in tattoos. She's got a L'chaim tattoo on one arm that's upside down because only she can see it. So only she can see it because she doesn't give a shit if you can see it. She says. She says, I remember feeling totally like I had discovered treasure, like I had discovered the pot of gold. This is when she got started at the end of the rainbow. You get back so much more than what you could ever give when it works. She ends all her shows, which I think we can end our show this way. The two things she's learned in life. One, never know your place. And two, if anyone tells you to act your age, tell them to go fuck themselves. So,
See, folks, if you're having a crisis in your life and you want to do a new hobby, stand up. Not improv. just another example right there.
What was the last line there? What did she say?
She says, one, never know your place, and two, if anyone tells you to act your age, tell them to go fuck themselves.
I love it. Yep. I love it. And you know, honestly, Brian, this lady is everything you wish you could be.
88?
A senior citizen who's good at comedy.
Yeah, I mean, Brian's got 6 years left to...
you might be able to catch up to her.
I could get my AARP card in about 6 years.
What a positive story. I really, really like that.
I love her. There are videos and other pictures online. You can get more of a feel for her. You know, she just tells it like it is. You can picture it, you know. So,
well, that is the end of this week's Carlson Cast. Thank you so much for being a part of it. We enjoyed performing for you. We hope you liked the show. Make sure you tell a friend, rate, and review. Thank you to Billy DeTore for debuting this week in Comedy History.
Yeah.
How about it? Ross, adequate as usual.
Sure.
Brian.
It's
the last you'll ever see of Brian.
You'll never work this room again.
We'll be back next week with Drew Michael. Until then, act right, Rochester.